That's out.
Oh, he dropped it.
I don't believe it. That's unbelievable. He was throwing it up. He thought he had it. It was a little lollipop. And the man who did so well with the bat has taken his eye off the ball. And the ball has just dribbled out of his fingers. He was about to throw it up.
Hey, great cricket.
The Great Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a great cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the great cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks, champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, Kane Williamson's freckled face gets past Faf du Plessis's rig as the New Zealand captain takes his team back to the top of the leaderboard after a win over South Africa overnight. Owen Morgan hits more sixes against Afghanistan than you ever have in your entire life as Rashid Khan stays just under Mick Lewis for worst ever figures in an ODI. Shikhar Dhawan is out of the World Cup and Rishant Pant joins the Indian team. Steve Smith is having a bat in his hotel room at 7 a.m. Cricket Australia employ an awesome foursome member to fix the bowling. Rwanda dismissed Mali for six, so we ask who got him. South African journalist Daniel Gallen joins from the UK. Hashtag AskTGC involves stripping, passive aggression, face salad and life decisions. My name is Ian Higgins and I'm joined by Sam Perry in Melbourne. Pez, first of all, good morning to you. And mate, it looks like the top four is all but taking shape now.
Mate, I'm just increasingly blown away by your introductions. There's a lot of Max Rushton.
I love that
as well from Guardian.
Thanks, mate.
Football Weekly. So congratulations on that. Good morning to you as well. Yeah, a lot's been happening in the World Cup. I guess that the main story for us, and we do apologise for not having a show out yesterday as a function of me moving house and losing a microphone. Interesting stuff to kick off the podcast. Yep. It was all about Owen Morgan yesterday, wasn't it? He goes 17 sixes, 148 off 71. Balls. Isn't Morgan meant to be one of those anchor batsmen for England as well? Their batting is just something else, I think. Don't forget he was dropped at Cow Corner from Rashid, though.
Oh, and wasn't he?
You know, isn't that a great – it's a hell of a great cricket thing to do. Just to put that little parenthesis around it. He was dropped at Cow Corner early on. Rashid had him. He was dropped.
I mean,
don't forget that when it comes to – describing one of the great World Cup innings, one of the great memories for the man and for the country, and hitting 17 sixes. Mm. He was dropped.
Well, let me go one further, Pez. And of those 17 sixes, I reckon seven of them were rank half trackers. And, you know, it was a great display of execution and skill. I mean, the bloke hit 150 at literally 200 strike rate. But fuck, there were some drag downs from the bowling. I mean, Nabi and Rashid both dragged him down. He pulled off the back foot, I reckon, six or seven times, rank half trackers. And then there was probably five or six others which were half volleys. And, like, batsmen these days, you saw, like, Aaron Finch do this consistently in this World Cup, but he also did it against Yasir Shah in the UAE there, where, like, those wrist spinners, if they bowl half volleys, batsmen can just lean back, get underneath them, and with the bats and their execution and their skill and their strength, it just goes for six down the ground with a lot of boundaries being very short straight. So what I'm saying is that he was really gifted 148 off 71 balls.
I might
go the other way this podcast just to see what the reaction is, but like, yeah, fuck England, that's shit. Like, so what if they beat Afghanistan, you know, by 150 runs? It doesn't mean anything. It means nothing. Owen Morgan was lucky, should have been caught. Fielding was a disgrace again. Don't get me started. Just pathetic fielding from Afghanistan, and they literally dropped the World Cup when they dropped Owen Morgan.
Yeah. I mean, those drag downs happen because they're getting hit for six. It's a bit of a symbiotic relationship.
That's
I can
true.
Say that as a Yips securing leg spinner at age 16 or even earlier. Anyway, let's talk about me. There has been a lot of reaction, he goes, hasn't there, to our self-loathing, mine in particular, of our own nation. So
yes.
I'm sure the listeners will enjoy hearing just some sledging of England. Absolutely disgraceful. You know, gifted sixes. Mm. They blagged their way to 397, you know, hitting 190 off the last 15 overs, whatever it was. And then, I mean, Archer was sort of none for none for 40 off eight overs at one point, wasn't he? Or one for 40 or something. I mean, so he can't bowl on flat wickets. Mm-hmm. He'll be three for 50. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about that. Adil Rashid went out over six and over against Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
Not looking good for them there. And down with three for 60.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I did notice that as well. Some of the English buying was ultra aggressive as well. I mean, Mark Wood into that team is a real interesting addition as well. I mean, there was the amount of guys who got hit in the head and nastily so as well from the Afghanistan players, like just getting absolutely rocked by Archer, and particularly Wood, as there's a huge noise outside this studio of mine. So, I mean, England, mate, yeah, looking good. I mean, it's really hard to take a lot away from the Afghanistan match against England because they're expected to be beaten. They've beaten it by 150 runs, so job done. It's just kind of eye-catching the individual performances, particularly of Morgan, who is batting at, what, he coming at five, and just hit 150 off 70 rocks. Like, it's pretty impressive stuff, you have to say. But overall, mate, and especially with the win overnight to New Zealand, the top four is done, mate. I mean, the game tomorrow, Bangladesh and Australia, That's it. If Australia win, they'll be 6 points in front of Bangladesh. There's three games left for each team to play there, so you get 2 points for a win. So Bangladesh would have to win all three games and Australia to lose all three games, which is feasible playing against, well, they've got to play against South Africa, but they've got England and New Zealand and South Africa to finish the tournament. So it's tougher finish for Australia. But the top four, mate, the top four looks like it's a lock.
It does look like a lock, he goes. Bangladesh are the only team remaining in the hunt, I think. I think that as we go to where there are some mathematical calculations otherwise, but I think New Zealand have prevailed over South Africa overnight in the last over. I think that was the match that needed to turn on its heels a little bit just full of cliches this morning, just to set the cat amongst the pigeons, you know, with the table. But yeah, New Zealand have prevailed, and it looks like the top four is pretty locked. I mean, Bangladesh are playing some fantastic cricket, though. You know, they annihilated the West Indies. We haven't spoken since they beat the West Indies, and chased 320 in 41 overs. Yeah. Shakib Al Hassan, another ton.
Yeah,
we might find out something about Australia tonight as well. So you never know. But you're right. I think if Australia wins tonight, well, it's curtains for the top four, and I think we can look forward to 10 reasonably meaningless games coming up, possibly more.
Yeah, and that is something to definitely look forward to as well. The England-Afghanistan game was the first game that I haven't watched in this World Cup because I've really bought in. I've watched every game except for the Afghanistan one. Now, mate, the argument to have more teams in the World Cup, I understand it from a point of like, it should be a World Cup, therefore more teams should be in the World Cup, in the same way that we're doing a live tour, a live world tour, which goes to two countries. It's exactly the same as that, Pez. And I don't know why people want more associate nations. Well, a association. There are 10 test playing nations here. I don't know if this would work. Like, I understand the point that like people want associate nations because they want to see, you know, like cricket expanding to all parts of the globe. And like, I think people want cricket to succeed more than it already has. To me, the issue of like having an associate nation is might help them in the short term, but the longer term play, surely the biggest issue with world cricket is that three countries take 95% of the profit. Like that is literally the issue, surely. Not that like, you know, Ireland aren't in this World Cup, which I'm sure would help them maybe for next year. But until India, Australia and England share the profits of the world game, the game is not going to grow to a point where you can have 32 teams in a World Cup, i.e. the FIFA World Cup, surely.
Yeah, I think that's a fairly sensible point that you make when it comes to growing the game of cricket, sort of clamouring for more teams at the World Cup, particularly if they're not ready from a cricketing sense, is not long-term or sustainable. But I understand it as well because the World Cup is the time when all cricket nations are focused on the one thing. And the cricketing world, however big or small it is, and we've seen some amazing numbers about that in relation to the India-Pakistan game, but the cricketing world's focus is on one thing. So that's the time, like with Davos, you know, or the G20 summit, where people try and put their agenda forward. I think you're right. I think the major it strikes me that the major issue as to why a lot of associate nations aren't emerging is because of that profit split that you mentioned. I think that that might have changed recently. I don't know. We're going to have to talk to someone who knows deeply about this kind of stuff. Mm. But I think the broader point's true. You know, that the top three still seem very far ahead financially in terms of their resources, etc. I think we'd all like to see more associate nations. We'd like to see world cricket grow.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be great to go to a World Cup with 16 teams, 20 teams.
Absolutely. And,
you know, personally speaking, I don't need them all to be vying for the World Cup, though that would be great. I can put up with a couple of lopsided matches. They still throw their own highlights forward. And I do think that they create moments, at least for some of those minnow teams, as yardsticks, you know, from which they go, you know, they get better next time. Mm. Some people are starting to say that, well, Bangladesh won two World Cup matches in the last time around. Now they've only won one. They've gone backwards. Well, I guess if you look at it mathematically, sure, they have. But when you look at guys like Rashid Khan, Mohammad Nabi, and the impact they're having on the world stage, you know, they're a viable. They're a viable, like, outfit, Afghanistan, to me. And they can't have been, like, you have to be able to kind of take a risk and put them into a tournament like the World Cup to start from somewhere.
Mm.
So, you know, it's a bit of a vexed one, to use a Nick Kyrgios term, I think. But, you know, it's not all going to be solved by dumping teams into a World Cup, I agree.
Mm.
Similarly, I'd like to see more from the ICC in terms of efforts to expand the amount of viable teams going around.
Mm. Well, just on the teams that are currently here, news broke yesterday that Shikhar Dhawan is out of the World Cup. He's out for the rest of the World Cup. He's going to be in a cast until mid-July, I think, which is when the World Cup final is. So he's out. Rishant Pant joins the Indian team, which means they've got about 15 wicketkeepers in that squad as well. So do England, now that I think about it. It's interesting because Shikhar Dhawan, who seems to just do amazingly well in ICC tournaments. He had a fantastic Champions Trophy. He's done well in World Cups in the past. Him losing him at the top of the order is actually quite a big loss, despite them having, you know, incredible talent and great depth of talent. But him at the top of the order, powerful player, left-handed batsman, that's actually a bit of a spanner in the works for India. Would you agree with that?
No, not really, because I love Rishabh Pant.
Oh, I love him.
So as much as what you say is correct statistically, technically, and in terms of how it'll affect actual matches and results, I'm a novelty person.
Mm-hmm.
And so Rishabh Pant being involved gladdens my darkening heart as I get older, which is a separate issue altogether that I won't raise in a public forum. And he makes me happy. And I think he's a really fun player to watch. So, you know, Shikhar, I know you live in Melbourne. Feel free to come on the show. And help us with our battering ram into India.
But Pez, if Pant's playing, who's going to babysit Tim Payne's kids? All right.
Oh, yeah.
Steve Smith, OCD, has just got to a new level. News broke last week where he was shadow banning at 7 a.m. Ricky Ponting just walking the hallways. Didn't say why Ricky Ponting was just walking the hallways. He's now just operating as some sort of security as well. Old punner. Steve Smith just about at 7 a.m. waking up half the hotel. Steve might need to just relax a bit, or is this a sign of how just fucking itching he is to play cricket again after being, you know, suspended for a year and that?
And we got about 15,000 notifications upon, like, you know what, the verbal trip that Smith did by saying, "Oh, I was batting in the hotel at 7 a.m. It's a masturbation joke, you see.
Yeah, I like
it. We need to be tagged into that.
Yep.
Yeah, we're having a bat in the hotel, yep. So I just wonder how it actually manifested, like Ponting's walking down the hall. Clearly he can hear, because you can't hear someone batting when they play the stroke.
No.
It's more, it's probably tapping the bat on the ground, right?
Well, unless he's got like a sock, like he's suspended a tube sock with a ball in it from the ceiling fan. And he's just crabbing across his hotel room and flicking it to the onside.
Yeah, or just dropping a tennis ball in front of him or a cricket ball, even better,
yeah,
and just driving it right off the middle into a wall.
Yeah.
Anyway, Steve Smith loves batting, and there was and he did a press conference yesterday where he was asked about it, and he seems really quite comfortable with that, like, you know.
Yeah.
And I like it.
Yeah.
You know, nothing makes me safer than knowing that my number three, number four batsman for my country is essentially a batting savant who is addicted to the art of it. Mm-hmm. That's what I need. Mm-hmm. We need more of this because, like, we know in grade cricket, he goes, like, there's this duality where despite the fact that you invest, say, 24 to 30 hours per week in this sport that you actually pay to play, mm-hmm. you still pretend that you don't like it. And that you're too cool for it.
100%.
And so, like, I actually think it's a sign of maturity for Steve Smith. When people think there's this immaturity too, I think it's a sign of maturity that he just owns the fact that he loves cricket.
Yeah.
It's really hard to get to that point. You know, like, he's on a spiritual plane with his relationship to the game that I could only dream of attaining, and many of us could dream of attaining. And I think that's why a lot of people kind of mock him for it, because they'd like to feel like him. Imagine just loving cricket as much as Steve Smith.
Oh, well, you would, wouldn't you, when you get to bat as much as he does. But, like, you know how Bairstow is a fucking rare unit? Like, you're aware of that. But Bairstow doesn't seem to own it. Like, Steve Smith has owned his quirkiness and, I mean, yeah, clearly he loves it. But Bairstow is a rare unit to the point where he's headbutting blokes to say hello, and not in a malicious manner. I believe he, like, rests his head against other people's heads and, like, nestles in. That was like the Bancroft thing, right? That was
their heads met.
Their heads met. Great podcast episode if you want to go through the archives. Anyway, I think Bairstow thinks he's alpha, and he's not. I get that impression. Like, you know, he's out in the boundary. He's boundary riding. He's sliding around. You know. Sells himself as an athlete, but I think he's weird. He's got a look in his eye, Bairstow, so that he's weird. And I want Johnny to own that, and then I think he will finally overcome the demons of Perth, the sins of Perth. Just a little side note, just to bring Bairstow into the Steve Smith conversation.
Because I suspect that Johnny Bairstow is pretty comfortable with who he is, but what you mean is you need him to, like, overcome the demons that is being accepted by a particular strand of Australian man.
Me.
Who doesn't deal with anyone being any different, like with any difference. Is that what you mean? Like, you want him to be accepted by Australian men?
I want him to be accepted.
I don't think anyone else in the world has a problem with him.
Okay. So is this my problem?
No. Not just you. No, I just meant, no. Australian grade cricketers, I'd say.
Okay.
Rare unit.
Okay.
Weird.
Okay.
You know, why does he touch heads? Yes, okay, he scores hundreds all over the world and appears to be enjoying himself, but.
Yeah. I mean, I was watching him field against Afghanistan the other night, and he's really engaging in the crowd and stuff. Maybe he's having a good time as well. I'm not sure. There's something about Bairstow. I think he's just a little bit crazy. I think he's just a little bit rare.
Well, we could put it to the fans as well.
Okay.
If you know the personality type of Johnny Bairstow or what his angle is, just from a character point of view, and those who are listening to me say this, that you know what I'm talking about. Could you write into us? Everyone's writing into us now anyway. We've never had more correspondence.
That's true.
Just what's Bairstow's angle? Is he owning it? Is he is he comfortable in his own skin? What do we need to understand about Bairstow? Is it a cricket? Is it a narrow cricket issue, or is he truly a rare unit? Like, if you know him, I'm very open to this sort of stuff.
Mm.
Let us know.
Okay, good. Pez, we'll move on. What do you want to speak about? There's either, you know, Cricket Australia have employed a member of the Awesome Foursome to fix the bowling, or we could talk about Rwanda dismissing Mali for six in a women's T20. Which one of those is more absurd?
I do want to point out that it looks like Stoinis might be fit.
Oh, yeah, okay.
With the Aussie side. And I'm kind of, I never thought I'd say this, but I think I wanted to see Mitch Marsh. Only because absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Yes.
Him not being in the side just has the Van Basten effect. He's just going to come back. I'm like, oh, Mitch Marsh, he can bowl. He can sort of bowl high 130s and hit long.
Yeah.
And I also think it's because Stoinis has offered very little for a long time,
yes.
So why not try someone else who does the same thing? Because they can only be as – their worst performance is just going to be what Stoinis was doing anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think Marsh's bowling is better than Stoinis anyway, although Stoinis might be a bit – well, I think on Stoinis' resume you say that he's a better death bowler than Mitch Marsh, but in those middle overs, which is where Australia's been struggling – I don't know, mate. I was looking at New Zealand bowl last night, and I was just thinking, like, what if Hazelwood was in the squad and Pat Cummins bowled first change? Fuck, it just changes the entire dynamic of our team, because, you know, you and I are in charge of the Australian team.
It's our team.
Mate, I just feel like, can we just drop someone and then just bring Hazelwood in who's just, you know, fit? Because I just think, like, I don't care if he hasn't played enough ODI cricket. Like, he's still better than Berendorf and Kane Richardson. He's just better. So, like,
But what about Kultanile? He's a bit of a package. I've heard him describe that. He's a package. What sort of package does Hazelwood offer? It's not much of a package.
I think the package is then you get the test bowling cartel back together, and they are always a cartel because they're selling drugs on the side. Can you have any sort of other cartel except for a drug cartel? Other than
maybe technically you can, but it's normally associated with drugs. Yeah,
yeah. Good
and question. Fast. Anyway, and if you're a wordsmith out there, let us know.
And fast bowling cartels, and then Nathan Lyon comes in the team. So it's just the test team. I mean, just, we're talking about comforts here. We're talking about just things that we feel comfortable with. I don't know. I just think if Hazelwood was opening the bowling, I just think Australia's just a much stronger team. Coulton Isle might be Australia's first ever salad-based selection. It is glorious salad. It is world 11 salad. I saw it described by someone
who
wrote
it. Which he needs to shave, incidentally. Yeah, I've already talked about that.
Yeah, I mean, Australia's got some real good salad-based selections overall, must be said. And it must be said. Pez, how does someone get bowled out for six in a game of cricket? I mean, I've seen some low scores. I mean, we've all have some low scores. I'd actually like the people out there to write in and tell us what your lowest scores are, maybe attach a scorecard. Actually, no, don't attach a scorecard. I need to read the league by account in your game. But, like, I mean, six. I mean, it's harder to get. Like, that's hard. That's hard to be out for six.
I chased it down. First over, four balls. Well,
it was a new ball wicket.
I don't know, but I did chuckle looking at Twitter with a couple of people earnestly calling for the rewriting of records. You know, to have a couple of different classes of record because of, you know, this has changed some international records,
right?
And it got quite funny. Got into like, well, was it going to become sailing, where it's like, you know, the 18th category of the 23rd class, you know?
Yeah.
And someone like, yes it is, no, let's just have a two-tier system.
Yeah.
And then the two-tier system suggestion was basically, you know, good teams and shit teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't bother me, you know, around the rewriting of records. Personally speaking, my instinct is to feel sorry for Marley being bowled out for six and think that's great that they're playing. And also just, fuck, you know, maybe Rwanda just bowled well.
Pitched it up, used the new ball.
Sometimes yeah. If you just pitch it up, you give yourself a chance.
Yeah, give yourself a chance.
And so, then, you know, 80% of all wickets are sort of bowled LBW caught behind.
Yeah.
What's in common with those balls? They're in or around the stumps.
Yeah,
you know, maybe they just bowled the stumps.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. And then obviously they would have had a 10-minute change of innings, probably got the heavy roller on there, just really flattened it out, and they got it in the first over. So, you know, it sounded like a real coin toss match.
I've got to say, though, he goes, you know, in the context of world cricket, it's like just hearing Rwanda play Mali.
It's pretty good.
That's cool. Let's have a vision. That's cool. You start to think about how teams would play cricket across the world if they had international teams, like, or like really strong international teams. Like, what would a USA versus China World Cup final look like? Mm. You know, if you think about some of the guys who play NBA in the USA, mm-hmm. like the USA would be essentially like the Windies in the 70s and the 80s,
yep.
Probably times 10. They'd hit 170
yep.
bowling, wouldn't they? And they just hit long.
Mm.
I don't know. I'm probably going down rude, crude stereotypes here, so I'm going to back the fuck off.
But, no, I like you going, though. I just worried about the wickets in Beijing, and you know I have done for quite a long time. Let alone what's happening in Rwanda and Mali. I mean, I'm always bowling first there, just to see what the wicket does. Just having a look at it.
They would struggle. Yeah, you wouldn't probably pick four quicks in Beijing. I always had the same thought about four square handball. You know, if you had that at the Olympics, China versus US and stuff. But anyway, that's a separate issue. That's a different podcast that I'm on.
Yeah, not to mention, you know, East and West Germany. Let's get Daniel Gallen on the line, who's going to tell us what has happened with South African cricket, and then we're going to add to some seriously good hashtag AskTGCs.
We have a new voice on the show, he goes, this morning. I'm very excited to welcome Daniel Gallen, a South African sports journalist. He does a power of freelance work for EWN, for CricBuzz, for Wisden, for Cricket Monthly. You can read him there. He's based in the UK, but proudly South African. Lives in Brixton, actually. Lovely part of the UK. In fact, anyone who moves over there tends to move to Brixton. We'll talk about that later, Daniel. Daniel, he's in the stands at Edgbaston as well. Welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, good to be here. Been looking forward to joining the GCC for a while. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
mate, we've just we've just awoken here to news that South Africa have their loss has meant that the top four is now secure and the rest of the tournament is going to be boring. What happened to South Africa overnight from an Australian point of view?
Oh, they just lost to a better team. I mean, this kind of the same old story. Couldn't score enough runs, couldn't defend the small target despite all the promises that that was exactly going to be the plan, that despite no matter what South Africa's batsmen were going to score, the bowlers would defend it. But it turns out 241 isn't enough against Kane Williamson, who was, man, he was good. Just an almost perfect inning. So, yep, South Africa's out. The top four secured. We can pack it in and just kind of head to Lord's now.
Mate, for Australians, the last meeting that, you know, we had with South Africa, you know, all the sandpaper malarkey aside, we were destroyed. That was a side that featured AB de Villiers. But, I mean, from our kind of myopic perspective, South African cricket's quite good, and we're scratching our heads as to why the performance has been the way that it has for this tournament. I mean, how much of it is a function of a quite difficult draw to kick off versus just where the ODI side is actually at?
I mean, look, starting against England and then going to Bangladesh, who were confident, and then going to India in the space of a week didn't help. This isn't a very good South African side, especially when you take out AB de Villiers. The bowlers look short of leadership. And also something just happens to the side when there's a World Cup trophy at the end of the however many weeks the different tournaments last. I don't know. I mean, South Africa routinely hammer New Zealand, and yet this is the fifth defeat in a row, the third time in a row that they've effectively knocked South Africa out. So something just happens. I don't know. You put the ICC ban on it and they just fall to pieces. It's been disappointing to watch. And you know, if I can be a bit selfish, it's a bit disappointing for me to kind of meander over the next 3 weeks trying to find a narrative about a team that's all but knocked out.
Daniel, Hashim Amla was obviously a huge player and still is a huge player for this ODI side. He just went past 8,000 ODI runs. I believe he's the second fastest man to ever do that, just I think one innings behind Virat Kohli. He's really struggled this tournament. I mean, he had 50 yesterday, but I mean, how important was his lack of form in South Africa's lack of success?
Yeah, big factor, and obviously also Quinton de Kock hasn't exactly ignited the tournament. Hash has been a strange one. He struggled in the last year. He was also going through, I'm not going to be a pop psychologist about this, but his dad is struggling with health. I believe he's got cancer. So there have been some things weighing on Hash's mind. He left the side and went and worked exclusively one-on-one with the batting coach. And then he came back and he scored back-to-back 50s in the warm-up games against Sri Lanka and West Indies. And obviously everyone wrote Hash's back and those wrists and the foot movements and the flashing blades. And then he gets gone by Jofra Archer and kind of he regressed to the Hashim Amla of a year ago. He barely middled one today. He barely middled one against Afghanistan. Yeah, it's sad to see because, I mean, he's an absolute legend. And, you know, that 300 of the Oval remains South Africa's highest score in a test. It's just, it's not great viewing for South African fans to see a guy who is so revered and so well-liked go through this.
Just having been at the ground today, Dan, can you tell us a little bit about New Zealand as well? I mean, most people are penciling them in to the top four. I mean, where do you think they sit in relation to the other teams within the top four? Do you think they have designs on getting to a final and even, you know, springing a surprise? Or do you think that that might just be a bit of a best of the rest phenomenon?
I hope they win. Out of the four teams that are likely going to make the final, they're definitely the most likable. I'd like to see them. But I mean, they still rely on some of the big hitters. You know, Kane Williamson, Ross Taylor with the bat, with the ball, bolts. But Colin de Gronholm, the third grade cricketer who somehow managed to make an international career, but he just looks like your dad's best mate who turned up for a game, and he was amazing. He bowled ten overs for three runs apiece, came in and bludgeoned 60 odds. So, I mean, if that guy's putting in performances like that, there's no reason why New Zealand can't win it.
And so what will you do, Dan, for the next 3 weeks to find a narrative out of South African cricket? I mean, this is a good chance to get right into the gossip and sort of sniff around hotels and stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be hanging out in the lobby and the bar and trying to maybe get one of them to buy me a drink, and maybe I'll buy them a drink and they can open up. I'll try and not overuse every metaphor that I have and try and avoid cliches, which will be tough now. I don't know. I mean, I'm paid to be here, so I have to keep churning the content out, but it's going to be quite tough.
Dan, I want to ask you, I mean, obviously there's been discussion about AB de Villiers and his influence over this team and his non-selection, and Faf obviously said that, Faf de Plessis basically said that it wasn't an issue with AB de Villiers not being here. Then Dale Steyn obviously played in the IPL and he was out of the entire World Cup. I mean, these guys, de Villiers and Steyn, they're heroes of South African cricket over the last decade or more. You know, do their personalities loom large over this team? I'm just trying to find reasons. I mean, you sort of look at the South African squad, and it's a good squad, and they're on 3 points after six games. So I'm just trying to figure out why. I mean, do you think de Villiers and Steyn's influence over the team has anything to do with it?
De Villiers is more so. I mean, I think he walks into the side. I mean, I think he probably walks into most batting units in the world still today. The news broke that AB tried to get back into the team the night before the squad announcement. We're still unsure how exactly that transpired, but what we think is that he contacted Faf and Faf said, "Look, I mean, it's pretty late. I'll ask the guys upstairs," and they were pretty unanimous that, you know, this can't happen. He was offered a route back in December, but he turned that down. He said he was happy to stay retired. I think Dale's presence is probably more in terms of having an overt leader on the field, like a real senior bowler. I mean, Kagiso Rabada is with Dale Steyn in the field is still South Africa's best bowler. But just having a guy who's been there and done it, I think sometimes the bowlers looked a bit too frantic. It looked like they needed a bit of a calmer head in that unit. So it's hard to say. I mean, before the start of the tournament, I had South Africa finishing fifth. So and maybe even six. So I don't think this is a team that, you know, on paper deserves to make the final four. It's mostly been the manner of the defeat. I mean, they showed fight today. To give them credit, they showed fight today. They were just beaten by a better side.
Let me put a picture, a scenario together where Bangladesh beat Australia tomorrow in the UK there, and then. Australia then lose to New Zealand and England. And then it comes down to one game, Australia versus Africa. Australia must win to make the top four. That is essentially South Africa and Australia's final. I mean, can South Africa now stay in the tournament to finally knock off Australia in a World Cup game?
I don't know if South Africa can stay in the tournament, but I think people will celebrate back home like they'd won the World Cup if they managed to knock Australia out. So there's still something to play for there. I mean, look, I would happily see South Africa lose to Sri Lanka and Pakistan if it meant that we beat Australia and knocked them out of the World Cup. So there is still something to play for in that sense.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if you beat us, regardless of whether in the top four or not, because those demons loom large, I think. Dan, thanks so much for joining us. We'll speak to you again soon as well, mate. Enjoy hobnobbing around those hotels for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, will do. Thanks a lot, guys.
Hashtag IceTGC, Pez, favourite time of the morning, and it is very, very early in the morning, as good listeners out there know. Let's get straight into it, mate. Show with no name, says hashtag RCGC. Hi, gentlemen. Can you please explain the facial hair situation currently going on in the Australian camp? Is this some type of primal hierarchy play? Look forward to hearing your thoughts. Much love, Bales. Right, what is going on?
Well, firstly, thanks for the question, Show with No Name. Everything is a primal hierarchy play. In cricket and in life, I think a lot of philosophers believe that we're all engaged in it at all times. So that is that part sorted. Yes, it's a primal hierarchy play. There's a lot of history of teams going on tours growing facial hair.
Mm-hmm.
What's the facial hair that Show With No Name would be referring to?
Well, Dave Warner.
I mean, it's Warner. Who else is doing it?
I don't think anyone's got a new beard.
Mm.
I mean, Stoin is always clean shaven. Is Mitch Marsh got a thing going on?
Coulton Arlo seems to have a lovely 3-day growth.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does. Great.
God, he's rugged.
It's a salad-based selection. He's a good-looking man. Hair flowing in the wind.
He's just Farmer Wants a Wife, isn't he?
He is Farmer Wants a Wife, yeah. That's good. I mean,
yesterday he goes, I'm trying to teach my one-year-old child different parts of like the face.
Oh, yeah.
You know, say, oh, can you point to my nose? And he's good at it. Oh, where's my nose? Yep. Where's my mouth? Mm-hmm. Yep. Where's my ears? Yep. Where's my hair? And he just looks at me and then grabs some facial hair, which I was really impressed with, very proud of.
Anyway. That is. I mean, you've got yourself 1% of there. Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, I don't know what is it a primal hierarchy play? Is David Warner's beard a primal hierarchy play? I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, Warner's tried to reinvent himself so many times that he's obviously gone for an aesthetic makeover this time. Mm. Is it working for him? Oh, I don't know. He's being told to bat slowly, so it's weird. Everything's so confusing in this new David Warner mold. I don't know. I don't really like the bearded David Warner. We've already discussed this many times in this podcast that we all like the things that we know, and we do have a deep-seated fear of change. So I have a fear of David Warner's face changing to being the, you know, once punchable, once lovably punchable face to now being some sort of, you know, he's really grown into the man that he is now, where he scores at 70 runs per 100 balls.
Okay. Thanks for the question, show with no name. Wilson Smith writes in. G'day, Wilson. At Grade Cricketer, hashtag AskTGC. Hey, fellas, do you ever get tired of being negative about the Aussie team? How many wins would it take for you to consider random game-saving performances an acceptable defining trait? Would you rather lose as long as we bat like England? Love the show. Exclamation mark.
Love the passive aggression on this question, Wilson. I think he raises an interesting point. Yes, perhaps we are overly negative about the Australian team. I don't think it's about like us having to bat like England. It's more just like Australia have the exact same resources as England and India. Yeah, Australia are currently the world champions, won the thing 4 years ago. Yet we are clearly so far behind England and India and the way they approach the game. Even the selections of the team, it doesn't add up. I think that's more the thing. So I want Australia to win the World Cup. Of course I do, but no, I don't really get tired of being negative about the Australian team because they're just so inherently funny. Like, look at the stupid shit we've done over the years to the point where, you know, we just cracked it. You know, they brought a bit of sandpaper in the field and we go, nah, I mean, that's it. I mean, enough's enough, lads. You know, that'll do. I mean, the crime in itself was so small, but like overall, it was just like, you've been carrying on like dickheads for like 30 years and we're tired. So no, not going to get tired of being negative about the Australian cricket team or Australian men in general, as proved by your question, by being passive aggressive.
That's a great answer. Here goes. This is actually a really good question. This is a really good question of our culture.
Yes.
And of our time. Full disclaimer, we've had a bit to do with Wilson. Wilson's been quite instrumental in our podcast, particularly early on.
That's true.
And so we thank Wilson for that.
Yes.
And he asks the question in good spirits. So that needs to be said at the top as well. Mm. You just raised some really interesting points there, Higo. So, like, a few months ago, we were at the Australian Cricket Awards, and I'm not happy to say this, nor proud of it, but I got smashed.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm not proud of it, but it's true. And that's context for a conversation that I had with a very senior member of the Australian Test cricket side,
yeah,
who may or may not have been in a similar state,
yeah,
and in that conversation, it was said to me. I was told this later because I'd forgotten it, but it was said to me that maybe the grade cricketers just, you know, needs to celebrate the team more. You know, I'm not sure if the analysis stuff is really what you guys should be doing. There should be more celebration of who we are. I thought, oh, that's interesting.
That's interesting.
And I didn't really have the capacity to talk at the time, other than to say, look, Joe Burns is just out here. He's putting my bat outside my body, and that's why he's going to struggle in the Ashes. I'm an idiot and a dickhead. But it's this funny thing in, like, media culture of, like, sell versus tell.
Mm.
You know, like, is it our job to just get behind the boys, you know, because there's a lot of people who do that in the media and people like that.
Mm.
And to Wilson's question, which is essentially like, can you just get behind the boys a bit more?
Mm.
I just say, there are so many media outlets getting behind the boys. You know? Do we need another? Second, grade cricketers never get behind their own boys.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Play any grade cricket team, you want your friends to fail because it makes you feel good. So there's a character being played. Thirdly, this is the main one I want to talk about. This fucking good vibes only culture that we live in at the moment. Don't talk to me unless you're saying something positive. You know, I'm not going to deal with anything negative. Sometimes your best friends tell you the truth. You sometimes in your families, you express love through honesty. The Australian cricket side, it's got enough people fucking, you know, I was going to say, slapping its ass, saying how good it is. You only have to be on social media for 2 minutes to be thrown 37 clips of past success. Or to hear from some guy who played in the 80s or 90s saying, look, we're just building to something good. And how good's Starkey? I mean, that's all there. I think there are fewer people out there saying, not sure if the game style is as good as the other sides. But, you know, you hear it though, don't you, Higos?
Yeah.
Too negative. Good vibes only culture.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So, yeah, fuck him.
But he makes a good point, Wilson. Liz Troppington, oh, yeah. He goes.
Yep.
Oh, sorry, I read the last one, but can I read this?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's better if I read this.
I can't read this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Liz Troppington, sounds like a real name, writes in
yeah.
message, hashtag AskTGC. Firstly, throughout our website as well, yeah. greatcricketer.club.
Mm.
Hi, guys. Firstly, I'd just like to be transparent and admit I've never read your books, only peered over my husband's shoulder at the broadly spaced lines and large font and thought it looked like a tween novella. I've never listened to your podcast either, except in extremely muffled form through the bathroom door as my husband runs a bath and lays back and chuckles for 45 minutes. Despite this, I feel compelled to contact you as your world tour will bring you near my door, and I think the three of you would be very useful for an upcoming event I am organising. My husband Andy tells me that the world of the niche stripper is a burgeoning one. He has been to several stag do's in the last year that have had women of all different appearances and persuasions disrobe, fatties, geriatrics, those that dress up in rubber and leather, even those that dress in football uniforms. He suggested that for my best friend's upcoming hens do, I should hire the services of a male stripper from one of these niche fields. He then asked me if I liked the look of cricketers, as he knew a brilliant trio who, he was sure, would be willing to perform for the girls. He informed me that while two of you are truly niche with sloppy rigs and thinning hair, there is one of you who is more of a classic Adonis type, the perfect man to perform a lap dance for the bride-to-be. I was wondering if you would be available to perform for us as MCs and Chippendales in cricket whites for my best friend Zalia's hens party on Sunday the 11th of August in London. I believe this is the day before your London shows, so hopefully we can hire your services without too much alteration to your itinerary. Kind regards, Liz.
Okay, so we've got a gig sorted.
Well, yeah, I mean, that. Yeah, if you're keen on a private show, we can't do the 11th.
Because we're booked, because we're stripping for Zalia's hens.
We're definitely doing that.
Can we perform some sort of Faf du Plessis, you know, Durban towel routine?
Well, I'm alarmed at how quickly you've suggested that. You've been thinking about that for quite a while.
Got the question last night. I didn't sleep a wink. Didn't sleep a wink last night, just planning. I don't know what kind of music I'm going to walk out to. I don't know, mate.
We're definitely doing that. That's a life experience. We've got to do it. We're definitely doing it.
Can Budgie Smuggler sponsor it?
I'm sure there's all sorts of tie-ins we can do for this, but we'd be absolutely mad to turn that down.
Mad to turn it down. Yeah. we'd be absolutely mad. Do you reckon Andy's Andy's drowned himself in the bath whilst listening to this?
I just us in whites at hens. What are we doing? Are we doing throwdowns or something? While and you're naked? Or are we doing a whole shower scene where someone's sort of afraid to get nude, but then, you know, the alpha gets nude or something?
Well, what would be...
If you've got ideas of how we can actually perform at this hens do, let us know, anybody.
We'd also have to explain the whole Durban thing and why that's so significant to the cricketing sphere, cultural sphere. So there'd be a PowerPoint presentation to start with. We'd have to explain Australia's behaviour for 30 years leading up to that event. You know, David Warner barking at Markram, you know, the run out of AB de Villiers, you know, Nathan Lyon dropping the ball. We'd have to explain all those things before we could, you know, get into full character. But yeah, I mean, it could be a great way for me to meet someone. You know, always looking for new avenues, Pez, as you know. Could be turning up to Cricket Whites at the Hens in London on the 11th of August, on a Sunday, no less.
The night before our first London show.
That's true.
Which then will give us half an hour of content.
Well, and that's maybe a good time to promote that we are available for private gigs of all sorts. You know, we were doing bar mitzvahs, birthday parties, but now we're doing Hens parties as well. Didn't see that coming. You know, on top of corporate lunches, et cetera, et cetera. And if you do want to find out what happened on Sunday the 11th at Zalia's Hens, then do please come to the live show in London, which is the following night. Unfortunately, the Tuesday show is already sold out. And I say unfortunately, ironically there. Tickets for all of our live shows, Pez, greatcricketer.club. And if you want to contact us for corporate gigs, greatcricketer.club contact form is on the page there. See how we turn that RTGC into a promotion? That's
We just... We've secured some further guests as well, and it's really exciting. The guests that we've got, we're still working out how to announce it.
Yeah,
but yeah, stay tuned.
Well, we'll just lead people on until the day.
Good point.
Thomas Harris writes in, lads, reassure me in doing the right thing. I've recently got a job and I've worked a long time towards realising. It's in the media, which means I work Wednesdays to Sundays. I should be content. However, every time I listen to a great cricketer podcast, I contemplate giving it all up and jumping on a plane to Sydney to play in the baking sun on absolute roads in second grade, probably thirds realistically. As I write this, it sounds even more stupid than I thought. But geez, it'd be good to put the whites on again and have my leg pissed on in the shower. My question, do I need psychological help? Why has he listened to our podcast and thought, yeah, I reckon I could go around again? So I don't think he's...
And I want to know where he's jumping on a plane from to Sydney. So he's got a job in the media. I should be content. I should be content. Jump on, Wednesday to Sunday, job in the media, content. But I want to... He listens to us and actually wants to play cricket.
I know. That's weird.
That's... That's not what we're going for there.
Yeah.
But everyone reacts differently, you know. Others hear the show and think, just get behind the boys.
Well, Pez, just
game-saving performances.
Just before we wrap the show up, Australia play against Bangladesh tonight as this goes to air, because it is also the same day. Pez, any predictions for Australia and Bangladesh? Because we are doing another show tomorrow morning, so I want to make you look foolish by guessing what's going
to
happen.
Mate. Yeah, okay, fair enough. It's always the same. Like, I would like to burnish Bangladesh's kind of chances and in a way of just underlying my own snobbishness by saying they can actually play the code. But the truth is that when I turn on the TV, I'll expect nothing more than an Australian demolition. But it will be Australia's sternest test aside from India. I'll say that to you. I think it will be the toughest test over 50 overs, both sides. I mean, the West Indies could have knocked Australia off, but they only had about 20 overs of cricket in them, to be fair to them. I think Bangladesh are very confident. They've got one of the best all-rounders in the world. They play a different style of cricket to Australia. They're going to ask a lot of questions. But, you know, who was on... It was Vish who said the other night, you know, Starkish is such a linchpin. I mean, he just takes so many wickets. He's just so fast and tails the ball, you know. If Australia can make a decent total, I'd expect Stark and Co to be able to defend it. So.
All right. Well, my guess is Shakib Al Hassan scores a duck and takes no wickets. It goes for 85 of his 10 overs. All right. Well, find out what happens. We'll be back tomorrow morning. See you then.